The recording has started. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 1st of April, 2015. On the call today, we have J. Scott Evans, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Olivi Kwame, Aubrey Doria, Ann Aikman-Scalise, Greg Shatton, Chuck Gomes, and Alan Greenberg. I show apologies from Carlos Raul Gutierrez, Michael Graham, and Tom Barrett. From staff, we have Marie Cassoni, Mary Wong, Karen Lentz, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Carrie Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much. Is everyone else hearing the buzzing in the background?
Hi, Chuck.
Yes.
Yes, a lot of buzzing.
Okay,
yes.
Please mute your phones if you're not talking. And hopefully it's not me. So that's a lot better. Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome to everyone. This is Chuck Gomes, and this is, I don't know what number of meeting we have. We don't count them like they do on the CWG teams, but we've had a lot of meetings behind us. A lot of you have, most of you have participated in most of those meetings, and I appreciate that. I thank everyone for just jumping on board last week, and without a chair, you guys got some good work done, and I appreciate that very much. So thanks for doing that, and thanks again to Mary for taking the lead there. I appreciate that very much. All right. Well, we today are going to jump right in, picking up where we left off last week at row number 415. And before we get there, I just want to communicate one thing. With regard to row 4-8, principle D-1-B, and the change that the registry stakeholder group suggested from community to GNSO. There's been some good discussion on the list. There was some support for the compromise I suggested. I think I wrote it while I was on the plane between Istanbul and Los Angeles. And then Amr suggested an edit to that, which also seems fine. So we're going to, staff has gone ahead and made that edit, as you can see in Adobe there. But if someone still objects, this is not something I'm going to fight hard for. I don't think it's that significant. But if someone doesn't agree with the edits that have been made, then speak up, and we will deal with that. Greg?
Thanks, Chuck. Trying to understand the kind of compromise language would leave us, contributing to the GNSO challenge process. I'm not sure that contributing is seems like an ambiguous or word that doesn't have a particular meaning. So it seems that the way this is worded, that the GNSO would retain the right to challenge, but that other stakeholders will have the right to contribute, which I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean that they can't initiate a challenge, but they can agree to one, that they can request a challenge, but that the final say on the challenge rests with the GNSO? I'm not advocating a particular position yet. I'm more trying to understand what the mechanism we are recommending would now be.
So in the GNSO, Greg, anybody can participate in the GNSO processes. So did you have a suggestion for a different word rather than contributing?
Well, as I look at it now, it says that, first it says the GNSO maintains the right to challenge whether updates need further review for policy implementation.
And that's correct, because that's the GNSO is the developer of policy.
Right.
Start a GTLD. So that's
right. So that's, you know, the original suggestion was to, you know, not was to reject the change, by some. So I guess contributing will be the right to kind of speak up, in a sense. But the arbiter remains the GNSO.
Right. Which is the case, right, in a GNSO policy process.
Right, yes, no, I agree. It's I just want to be clear, and to the extent that anybody thinks that this is now giving the right to another stakeholder group or AC or man on the street to say, start a challenge or whatever you want to call it, that's not giving it that right. And I guess one other question is whether it should be impacted stakeholders or the community. Because then we get into the issue of who is an impacted stakeholder. Is the IPC an impacted stakeholder? Sometimes, all the time, none of the time. That impacted language has a tendency to sound like it's ring fencing things. With the idea of putting people outside. So I'm a little concerned about that language.
So, Greg, would you rather we go back to the original language?
Well, I think that if we took out impacted, and I see that's what Amr is suggesting in the chat, that would be, I think that would strike the right balance.
Anybody have a problem with taking out the word impacted? Okay. Let's take that word out. Thanks, Greg. Alan.
Thank you. I'm not sure if I'm confused or disagree or what. Perhaps first a question. Who is the challenge being made to?
Well, it's the implementation process that's going on, right? If a change is suggested by the implementation team, whoever that is, That's what would be challenged, right?
So essentially we're saying the implementation review team or someone notices that something's being implemented and it is not, it, and in their mind, it is counter to policy. And that would then have to be fed into the GNSO, and the GNSO could challenge.
Right.
Okay. And I guess I have a word to contribute with the problem with the word contribute, because that implies there is a GNSO challenge process.
Okay, do you have a specific suggestion instead of contribute?
Contribute,
too much time on this.
No, I understand.
We need to move ahead.
No, but I think it is important. If it was contribute or request a GNSO challenge, what I'm trying to get around is if the GAC or the ALAC sees a problem, we need to be able to bring it up to someone's attention, even if the GNSO proper has not.
Agreed.
Because the last thing we want is we'll wait till the board goes to the board and then complain.
Exactly.
So there's got to be words there that imply that the issue can be raised by someone else. Now, yes, we may always have a friend on the GNSO and tap them on the shoulder and say, psst, can you please raise that? But that's not always an effective way of doing things.
So are you suggesting, say, contribute or request?
Or request or bring to the attention of. In other words, force the issue that the GNSO has to look at it and say, is there a problem or not?
Okay.
They may not agree. They may not agree, but that's fine. But we've got to be able to get input into that process.
Okay,
which I think was the intent of the original word community there.
Anybody have a problem with that edit? Okay. Mary?
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks, Alan. It's a small point, but to the extent we make that change, and it might better reflect what we're all trying to do here, I think maybe we should also then change the idea of given the opportunity, because it might sound a bit patronizing, as if it's the GNSO giving other groups the opportunity to come talk to them.
That's a good point. Good point. Can you fix that? You're the writer today, so I'll let you fix that. Amr, please.
Thanks, Osama. Was someone going to go?
Your turn, Amr.
All right, thanks. I don't disagree with Chuck. With Alan at all. I think his point is very valid. I just did want to point out, since this is this principle is specifically addressing challenging implementation, or perhaps providing, or that could be in the form of providing guidance to implementation of a policy that was already developed. The way that this principle we're suggesting it be worded, allowing all stakeholders to contribute to the challenge process, I think that's very consistent with some of the other recommendations that we've made in the initial report, where anyone can perhaps request that the GNSO begin some sort of process to address a question. Then the GNSO decides what to do about that. For example, if it's an ongoing implementation of a policy that has been developed, there is the implementation review team, and this could be referred to that. If this is something that has already been implemented, then the GNSO could, for example, opt to launch a GNSO guidance process to address whatever the issue may be. It could choose to or could choose not to. But I'm personally comfortable with the direction we're headed in and with the way it's worded now. And I feel that it's not terribly ambiguous in terms of what steps the GNSO could or would take under this in a situation where a challenge is brought forward by any stakeholder, whether inside or outside the GNSO. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. Appreciate that. Jay Scott.
Yeah, this is Jay Scott. I was just writing a private note to Mary. I think we should change, and she's done it. Stakeholders have the right to bring specific issues, and then I would insert, to the GNSO Council, and to contribute, and then pick up that to contribute in the GNSO challenge process or whatever.
That sounds fine to me. Anybody have any comments on that?
Yeah, it's Alan. The intent is correct, but in fact, only GNSO members, GNSO council members, have speaking rights at the GNSO council. So I'm not sure how we bring an issue to the council. Maybe that just means sending an email to the chair, and in which case I'm happy.
Yeah, I think that can be handled. I don't think that's a serious problem. Okay.
I
do want to move on past this one, because if we spend this much time on every one of the comments, we're going to be in Dublin when we do our report, and I don't think any of us wants to do that. I do want us to take the time we need, but let's try and do it as efficiently as possible on that. So, Jay Scott, is that
Chuck, then I suggest the registry stakeholder group doesn't propose controversial changes.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. that's a done deal. You know, I was kind of in, a little bit of an awkward situation. I tried not to be too aggressive because I wanted people to feel free to to make their comments. I pushed back in cases where I thought maybe I could lend some understanding or something like that. But anyway, it is what it is. And so, but those comments are there, and I was pleased that we got some people in the registries who really took some time and focused on it.
Yeah, that was tongue-in-cheek, just for the record.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I appreciate that. Okay, are those old hands that I see up there? Or? So, okay, and Jay Scott, did you want to say something else? Okay, thanks. All right, let's jump over. Mary, you okay on the changes there?
I believe so. Thanks, Chuck.
Good. Thank you, Mary. Okay, let's go to 415. And oh, well, let's see. Wait a second. Let me look at the – I got to look at – oh, Ann's on. Good. And Greg's on. Greg, we thought maybe you had a conflict. This is great. We've got the IPC here. And so what I'd like to do, if either one of you can, is let you talk to 415 and then we'll discuss it. Now, if you're not comfortable doing that, that's okay. Just let me know. Greg, go ahead.
I just need to read it and remind myself if Ann has read it more recently or is ready to speak off the cuff, I will cede to her, and I'll cede to her in any event.
Yes, this is Ann. Thank you very much, Chuck and Greg. This is a very specific comment that came in when we sent out the survey. And my understanding about the comment was that someone who had been a very active participant in working groups said that, and PDPs said that performance targets per se and standards per se may not always be appropriate, but that timelines for implementation of policy advice are always appropriate, but that targets and standards may or may not be appropriate depending on the subject matter. And so I think this is really goes to the flexibility of what is recommended in a PDP depending on subject matter.
And so there's actually a specific change recommended there at the end of the first paragraph. Is that correct?
Yes.
And everybody can see that, I presume. So the IPC suggests modifying the language to read performance timelines as well as other targets and standards as appropriate. That seems okay to me. Is there anybody who doesn't think that change is okay? Okay, we got an agree there. I should scroll down so I can see if there's any others in there. Okay, thanks, Amr. All right. I think that change is okay. Do you want to continue, Ann?
Thanks, Chuck. I'm not sure what you mean by continue. Are we moving on to the next issue?
It goes on. Is the rest of it all related to that same point? I thought there's two more paragraphs in the comments on 415.
Oh, okay. It's not clear why a working group recommendation would project the need. Okay. So the point here from in the discussion on the IPC list was that it almost looks as though it's drafted so that a working group can punt forward to the IRT any policy issue it feels it can't deal with at the time. So there was a request for a clarification that if there's a policy issue, it's got to be dealt with by, in the PDP, by the working group, and it shouldn't be punted forward. Now, I don't actually recall whether there was a suggested change in language, and I'm trying to scroll down or something here.
While you're thinking about that, let me let Greg jump in.
Yeah.
Thanks. In my personal opinion, I think differs from this comment, although consensus is such that that happens from time to time. I don't think it's a sign of a punt to say that a working group may conclude that additional policy work may be needed during implementation. It's more a fact of life, and you can't necessarily anticipate everything that's going to come up. I think there is a concern that sometimes there may be working groups that leave policy at such a high level that there's a lot of policy left to be made before you get to implementation. But by and large, I think that's the exception, not the rule, and most working groups are pretty thorough in hitting whatever they feel they can hit in terms of setting up the policy. But it's just, in a sense, inevitable that there will be times when you'll come up, you know, midstream in implementation and realize that you have a policy issue. So I don't feel that this, you know, necessarily signifies some sort of weakness in the system of working groups. You know, obviously we should encourage working groups to resolve policy issues they can identify. But if there were never any policy issues during implementation, we wouldn't even have this working group.
Thanks, Greg. And before I go to Alan, do you want to say anything else on that?
Yes, thank you. The IPC's comments were approved by consensus prior to being submitted. I think it's accurate that what Greg says, policy issues arise during implementation, but what we're talking about here, if I can interpret the comments that came in while the survey was being filled out, and we were very careful to pursue, comments from folks who had not participated in this working group so we could have a bit more objective comment. The idea is that a working group in a PDP should not say, here's a policy issue, but we can't figure it out, but we think it's a policy issue, and in the future, additional policy work is going to be required. That's undesirable from the standpoint of the community being able to move forward. If a change in factual circumstances or an issue arises during implementation that creates an issue that has some policy implications, that's fine, and then we use one of the three processes. But if there's a policy issue that arises during the PDP, the working group should address it. That's if they need more facts, then they have to resort to experts or whatever. But if it's identified in advance, it should be, and again, I'm just restating, I think, what was commented by another party, and we did develop a consensus on it, that a working group should address that policy issue.
Thanks, Ann. So if you can think of any tweaks we can make to this, I'm going to give you time to think about that because I'm going to go to Alan, Karen, and Amr, and then we'll try and come to some sort of resolution on this. Okay? Alan.
Thank you. I believe that the wording in the recommend in the document right now is the correct one, and I'll give specific examples. Anne is right that if we identify a specific policy issue, we should do our best to address it. But that's not what this is talking about in my mind. What we're talking about here is to know that there are policy implications, but we don't understand enough about it to address it right now. I'll give you two examples. One is the current UGTLD process, where the group deliberately said, we're not going to flesh some of these things out because it needs a lot more discussion, and it's not till you go to the implementation that you start understanding what some of the issues are. And another example is on the PDP on directory services. That implementation is likely to include a major software design process. inevitably, when you embark on that kind of process, you will start asking questions that were not thought about before. Because once you're doing the software design, you're going to have to look at things at a level of detail which were not thought through and not able to be thought through until you go through that process. And there inevitably will be design things. Now, some of us suggested that for directory services, we may in fact want to have two PDPs, one the work you do before the software design and one the work you do after the software design. But this is another way of addressing that same issue and probably a more elegant way of addressing the same issue. So I think there are going to be many times when you can foresee there will be policy work required, but you don't understand the details enough to actually come up with the answers. So I think it's worded correctly as it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Karen, your turn.
Thanks, Chuck. So I've changed my view a little bit after listening to everybody talk. I mean, my initial thought when I read this and looked at the principle was to be confused as to what was in mind there, because it does seem to encourage leaving things unfinished. But if the intent is to go to, things that the GNSO or the working group are aware of and identifying them, I can envision a circumstance such as Ellen is talking about where something like that could be identified. I think it would also be helpful to, to the extent that it's possible, perhaps give some guidance from the GNSO on how they see those policy issues being resolved. So if, for example, a couple of recommendations are tied to one another and one of them may have some open questions, are we meant to not move forward on any piece a little bit of the kind of dependencies if such exist. And then the second is just sort of an organizational point. This principle falls under the principles that apply primarily to implementation, and I can see an argument for putting it here or above, but it seems it is direction to focus on things that occur in the PDP and developing the recommendations, so it may make sense to move that up. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. So are you okay then with the way the principle is worded?
Yes, I am. I think we could maybe clarify a bit as to, if there's a distinction between, policy work that we just aren't doing or policy work that we foresee but, can't do at this stage.
Thanks.
That
Amr.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. I definitely agree with both Alan and Karen on everything they've just said. I think there have been previous examples that support this and would probably which is why I would say that I am also comfortable with the language as is. For one thing, it's not just about identifying policy questions that may come up in a PDP working group. Some of these questions may already have been identified. Some of them may actually be questions a PDP working group has been chartered to answer but has failed to answer. Something like this has already happened, for example, in the Thick Who Is PDP, where the PDP working group provided a recommendation with instructions on how to proceed depending on how the question is answered during implementation review. And this is a very specific situation that I'm just providing an example for, and it may not apply to other examples. But in another scenario, a policy issue may be identified that a PDP working group is not chartered to answer and may not, and the scope of the PDP may not allow the PDP working group to address this. It may be a huge issue. It may be something that the PDP working group can't work on, may not have the capacity or the time to work on. And in situations like this, a PDP working group can very much, within its recommendations, provide a recommendation that a new issues report be published addressing this whole other policy situation, and that may need to go, that may need to progress as implementation of the original PDP's recommendations are happening. So I think there are several scenarios where policy issues may need to be addressed during implementation. There are different ways that could be done, and I think that the way the principle is worded right now would allow for these processes to move forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Omer. I appreciate that. Now, let me come back to Ann or Greg and get your best thinking. Did you come up with maybe a way that we can tweak it to improve it, or do you think it's safe that we can just explain why we think it's okay?
Yes, it's Ann, Chuck. I agree with the way that Karen characterized the work, and I think, you know, on behalf of the IPC, even though this was not, you know, my comment in particular, the IPC comments, I think, are very consistent with what Karen described. I'm sorry I don't have, you know, a language change. I could propose one afterward, or perhaps staff could propose one consistent with Karen's characterization of the work.
Why don't we do that? Why don't we just go, this is Chuck, go ahead and afterwards, when you have time to give it some thought, if you have a suggested change, I'm not hearing anything that's at all problematic with what the IPC changes. I think we're all in agreement with what they're saying. So, Ann, why don't you do that after the fact, or anybody else, Karen, if you want to work with her, you can do that too, because I don't hear anything that would be problematic in tweaking it a little bit, and then we can just agree on the list if we're okay with it. Or if you decide after trying it that maybe we just leave it alone, that's okay too. Let's jump to Alan, and then we'll get to Greg.
Thank you very much. I think the fact that the IPC homed in on this is important, though. The logic behind why those words were there, and you know, at the time we did talk about it a fair amount, is not intuitively obvious from reading the principle. So
yeah.
I think it needs a footnote or a rationale incorporated into it or something to say we're not just copping out and saying you can defer work till later. You know, the fact that it was questioned, as we see in the IPC comment, indicates that our text was lacking something. So even if the principle is correct, I think we need to defend it somehow, and I don't much care which mechanism we use. Thank you.
Good points, Alan. Appreciate that. Greg.
Thanks. It's Greg. I got a fresh line, so if I sounded like I was buzzing before and don't sound it now, that's good. If I'm still buzzing, then that's not good.
I'm sorry you're still buzzing, but go ahead.
Let me see what happens if I pick up my speakerphone.
Much better.
Okay, well, in any case, and now, of course, my phone starts ringing. Couple of possible suggested language changes. One might be to say additional policy work may become apparent during implementation. Another one that I thought of was additional policy work may be identified and be needed during implementation. Neither of those are breathless, deathless prose, but I think it kind of gets at the temporality issue, that the idea is that it's not policy work. We know that's happening now, but we're just kind of sick and tired of doing policy work for the moment, but rather it's that later on, policy work not specifically identified or identifiable during the working group phase will become apparent and identifiable during the implementation phase.
So let's take Ann and Karen, if you want to help her, that's good because of your comment. Why don't you work on that afterwards and submit a little red line of the section and put it to the list, and that way everybody can see it and be comfortable with it. It's been a great discussion, and this is an example where it's really appreciative. I really appreciate the fact that the IPC took the time and others did it too. I'm not just singling them out, but we're talking about their comment now. The fact that they put thought into this is very much appreciated. And, Alan, I think you're right. Obviously, there's something that left an impression that we didn't intend to leave, I think. So that's good. Thank you very much on this. There's one more item on this, subparagraph B on page 16. Ann, do you want to talk about that one?
Sure. Thanks, Chuck. This is Ann. This has to do with subparagraph B under number one, implementation standards, and they are the principles that apply primarily to implementation. And I think essentially this is a request for a clarification as to the meaning of the first phrase, changes to GNSO implementation guidance. I think the question arose, well, how would such changes to guidance arise, or how and why would those come up? And I don't know if the answer to that is IRT or board action, or but it was more that the question was being raised about how changes to implementation guidance would arise procedurally. Thank you.
So, first of all, I think that we're talking about implementation guidance that was provided in the PDP report, right? So, it seems to me that that could happen through an IRT. It could happen through other, if there's no IRT, which is a possibility, although we're recommending it, in fact, requiring it with an exception process, whoever the implementation team could possibly deviate from that. So I guess we could state that in here. Greg, is that a new hand? Okay. Thanks. And by the way,
I wonder if I could cut this short, possibly, Chuck. It just strikes me that maybe it would be fixed by adding the word proposed. Perhaps the concern is that that if, in fact, but through the PDP, implementation guidance has been provided, that any change to that implementation guidance is only a proposed change. And that's a concern.
That's a good suggestion. I think we might need to go a little bit further, and I'm obviously can't speak for the IPC, but I think I understand what they're getting at. So what if we were to say, make the change, propose changes to implementation guidance, and then maybe put a parenthetical, for example, from the IRT or from an implementation team if there's no IRT, and
right.
Parentheses, something like that?
This is Ann. Yes, I think that would address the question. I'm not sure. Greg, do you feel that addresses our constituency's question, that what Chuck has just suggested?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
I like short responses like that. That's good.
Can we move on?
Okay, excellent. Now, I'm going to ask a question here. In our call next week, Greg and or Ann, as far as you know, will you be able to participate on that call? And the reason I'm asking is, if not, if there's nobody going to be from IPC, it might make sense for us to skip ahead to other IPC comments. If you think you're going to be involved, then we don't have to jump the gun on that.
This is Ann. I do expect to be able to participate next week.
Okay.
And this is Greg, Buzz. I expect to participate as well.
Thanks. Okay. Appreciate the buzz in this case. Right. Okay. Anything else on 415? So we can, I think, then go to 418, which is an ALAC comment, and we have, I think, a couple people on here from ALAC, don't we? Cheryl and Alan, and did I miss anybody in my quick glance? So let's go to 418, Ben, and would one of you like to talk about this one for us? And I understand if you're like me, you kind of have to get up to speed on the fly here because you've been so busy. Alan, you're up.
Thank you. And I raise the issue with some trepidation because I know there is strong disagreement from a number of people within the GNSO. In the past, when we've had issues which divide people heavily, either because of the work they do and who they work for, or because simply different philosophies, there tend to be two results. One is a deadlock, and the VI discussions are perhaps the poster child, the best example of that. And it's not clear that if the board had taken the proper action and remanded it back to the GNSO, it would have worked a lot better a second time. I know some people claim that, you know, it was the board tinkering with things day by day that caused the problem, but I'm not 100% convinced. The other issue is when there are issues where the public interest, and from my perspective, I'm looking very much at user interests, are at odds with those of contracted parties. The contracted parties are in a position to contribute heavily to the to a PDP working group, and the user perspective is often not given quite the same level of support. And ultimately, contracted parties, if working together, the registries and registrars, have the effective ability to veto if it ever got to council level. But before that, at the working group level, we are told we must come to agreement. And that agreement sometimes results in a very watered-down recommendation. If something is decided right now by the board, and everyone agrees that the board shouldn't be making arbitrary policy decisions, the board has a fiduciary requirement to honor the bylaws and consider public interest issues and a number of other such issues as paramount, regardless if people are going to suffer financially from it. And the GNSO has no such mandate, and that's of great concern. So it's not only with the new processes, but with the basic process. But when you go to an accelerated process, a faster process, which has less time put into it and perhaps less people put into it, the problem just is exacerbated. And really, the question is, how do we address this? You know, we're putting all these processes in so the board will never be in a position to make a choice, to have to make a policy decision, but how do we make sure the policy decisions that are coming out of the GNSO, in fact, are honoring those aspects of our bylaws? Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And I put myself in the queue because I wanted to participate more as a participant rather than the chair at the moment. But with regard to VI, and this is a side point, it's not super relevant, but even the registries weren't united on what the right choice was on this. So just to point that out. So the kind of situation we get, and I think we're going to have, and I'll get more general now and not just talk about VI, but I think we would be naive to think that we're always going to be able to develop a policy that has broad support. It's just not going to always happen. Now, does the board need to make a decision? My own personal view is that to the extent that they can let market forces work, they should do that and not force a policy from the top down. There may be cases, though, where that doesn't work and they have to make a decision. So I understand that. And I'll stop there and go to Aubrey.
thanks. Avril speaking. I agree to the extent with what you just said, Chuck, to the extent that the board should not make a decision. I agree with that. I'm not sure how to deal with that market forces are what needs to prevail, because the global public interest may indeed not be identical to the result of market force. And I think that the mechanism that we kind of have to rely on, though, is the one that exists now, that the board and the GNSO need to work it out, that it needs to go back and forth, or indeed, as sometimes we're seeing indications of, we have times when the board and GNSO put together a joint working, or there's even more group in it, to try and resolve a process like we're doing now with the EWG-PDP process, where there's disagreements and there's a fair amount of work being done between the board and some representatives from inside the GNSO to try and arrive at a solution. Now, this isn't a global – I mean, we're talking process in this group, not, you know, a point of global public interest, although – you know, that whole PDP effort is really one that gets involved in global public interest. So I don't know that we need to reserve or even make things special for resolving that, other than that interaction between the board and the GSO should continue until such time as there is a resolution. Thanks.
Well, good point, Aubrey. Thanks. Alan?
Yep. Thank you. With regard to VI, that wasn't one that I was referring to as contracted parties versus other people. That was one where I said there are major philosophical differences, and you know, the veto in council I was referring to doesn't address that one, but it does say when people are going into something with major philosophical differences, and a decision has to, you know, you're almost to the point where a decision must be made. You know, in the VI case, the board, I believe, made the wrong decision in that they made an irreversible one, which, you know, personally, I think that was wrong. But be that as it may, what Avery is describing of, you know, going back and forth would work perhaps for cataclysmal decisions. That is, it's obvious to the board that we have not finished the process, and we're passing on a recommendation, but it's not a good recommendation, a sound recommendation. But for things that are less onerous, the board gets a recommendation from the GNSO, and they honor it. They don't look at the details of it and say, was the best bargain hammered out? Or was there, you know, implied pressure that resulted in something which was not purely in the public interest. So on the major decisions, the back and forth will work. On the lesser ones, it just doesn't. It's not going to play out that way.
Thanks.
I still think there is an issue.
Yeah, and Alan, I'm going to come back to you after I go to Aubrey. Okay, and
sure.
And the question I'm going to ask you is, okay, is this a statement that the ALAC is making? Or do you think some kind of change in the principles is needed to address the statement? So, again, you have a chance to think about that while Aubrey is in the queue again.
Okay, thanks. This is Aubrey again. A couple of things. One of the things that I thought Alan was going to call me on was the because that's where we started talking on the emergency, on the things that had to happen quickly. And indeed, the board does have the ability to make those temporary interim decisions in those emergency cases. Now, getting to the case to Alan's other point, the global public interest is because of mission and what have you, is, as Alan says, paramount. Now, in terms of informing, first of all, you know, I have problems with the board isn't going to pay specific enough attention to do this. We pay them the big bucks so that they will pay attention. So to build something into the process that assumes they're not going to do their job is problematic to me. But beyond that, putting, you know, holding their hands to the fire on this is indeed the role of the advisory committees. That, you know, whether it's a security issue, a user issue, a public policy issue that governments think is within their purview, that is their job to, and you know, the board will be need to interact with them as well, may bring, you know, the GNSO and the appropriate AC into the consultants. So I believe that the mechanisms are there. I understand Alan saying there's an issue, and perhaps we really should describe that there is sort of a normative set of guidelines. I guess that's contradictory. But there's basically a normative set of behaviors that are expected for the board, the ACs, and the GNSO in these situations. And I think all those materials are there. It's just we forget to use them. And perhaps, you know, we do need to add something to talk about, you know, it isn't GNSO throws it over the wall to the board throws it back over the wall to the GNSO saying, nope, fix it, et cetera, and that keeps on ad infinitum. But perhaps we should suggest that if there isn't a resolution in one or two round trips, that, you know, a sit-down is required, you know, a virtual sit-down, of course, and something to basically deal with the issue. But I don't know that we need to create new mechanisms. I think we just have to give, you know, the AC and the SOs the roles, give them the opportunity to fulfill the roles that they've already got within the resolution of this process. Again, understanding that, yes, this could take a while, and the board may force put in an interim solution because something needs to be done now, that provision already also exists, as far as I understand. So I think the piece parts are there, but I think Alan is right in the respect of saying, yeah, but that doesn't happen. Even though I'm saying everything is there to make that happen, it doesn't happen. So perhaps a guideline within all this that gives an indication of how that can happen. Thanks.
That's very good, Aubrey. Chuck speaking again. I wonder if you have come across another possible recommendation. I don't think it's a principle, although I suppose it could be worded as a principle. But I wonder if, you know, maybe this has uncovered the ALAC comment and this discussion we had. Maybe it would be appropriate for us to add a new recommendation along the lines that you just suggested. So let me come right back to you, Aubrey, and get your reaction on that.
That may be a way to handle it, to basically say, hey, folks, you've got the tools, use them, but put more politic-like. Could be a good idea.
Yeah. So are you or is anyone else willing, maybe even to work with Aubrey, to formulate a possible new recommendation that would get this point across? I think it would need to involve Alan or Cheryl or somebody from the ALAC, too, to see if we address their issue. And let me ask one now. Does show some responsiveness to the concern? Does it start to meet the concern that you're expressing here in this comment, Alan?
I guess in a different universe it would. I'm not convinced that it's practically implementable. There's only so much time people want to put into these kind of things. There's only so many feathers you want to ruffle. And, you know, let's be honest. I'm thinking back to a particular experience that some of you are aware of a number of years ago where we did have a PDP where the two sides were squared off with each other and spent a year plus staring at each other and saying, you know, you're not listening to us on both sides. And it ended up with a very, very weak set of recommendations, from my perspective, certainly, from a user's perspective. And the ALAC did consider telling the board to reject the GNSO recommendations, but knowing that the GNSO in general had absolutely no stomach to look at it again, and we would have died, it would have died with no change instead of a weak change. So we just gave up, walked away from it.
So, Alan, my question is, I think,
let me, just one moment. I think the problem has to be addressed at the core of how we make consensus decisions, not how do we fix them after we make the wrong ones. And if we went through that whole process today, it would be different. The philosophies of everyone is different than it was 5 years ago or 6 years ago. There's no question about that. But it's equally not quite clear that we have now reached perfection. I'll shut up now.
I'll come back to you. Let me let Aubrey go ahead and jump in.
Thanks. This is Aubrey again. I don't believe that we could be pessimistic about actually all doing the jobs that got. I think that in adding the guideline that, you know, you've got to find a way to bring this together and to talk about it, is that, but remembering that we only discover what the global public interest is when we reach the full consensus, when we reach the ICANN consensus, after we've undergone all the steps that the policy process gives us. And this particular bit of AC, you know, should say, reject this unless. That is kind of their job, just like it's the GNSOs to take everything in and try and bring it together. And I tend to believe that if we went through this kind of routine even once, we would start to be educated more. And so I guess I'm looking for recommendations that make us better at doing the job we've got, as opposed to recommendations that assume... Now, you know, maybe there's a way to redesign the GNSO so that users are better represented, although if you talk to the CSG and the NCSG, they believe they also do bring to the table, you know, a certain user perspective or a certain kind of user perspective. And
okay.
Have we lost Avery?
Some groups over time to make sure we don't get into these boxes. Oh, I'm still here. I was babbling on.
Oh, no, there was...
Yeah, I'll stop.
We lost you.
But anyhow, I think we should be optimistic about our group.
I like being optimistic myself. So if you and if Karen wants to help... Would draft something, and I suggest you run it by Alan and Cheryl, since they're from the ALAC, as a possible recommendation. Or if you think of another way we could incorporate something to do this, I don't think it's a bad idea to make the kind of suggestions that or guidelines that you're talking about, Aubrey. So, are you willing to take a crack at that and send it back to the list? Aubrey?
That'll teach me to open my mouth, for sure.
That's true. I know. I don't see it as a long thing, but if you're willing to do that, and if you're not, if you decide that, you know.
No, I am willing.
Okay.
It's making sure I remember to actually get it done in the middle of everything else.
I know. I know it well. Okay, Alan.
Yeah, thank you. Just in response to something Avery said regarding the CSG and the NCSG, make no mistake about it, I wasn't describing the ALAC, you know, the champions of the users versus the world. What did come out of the PDP I'm talking about was only because of the strong support from the business constituency in particular, and the presence of NCSG or NCUC at that point, perhaps, you know, so at least it wasn't disavowed. They're trumping money, to be quite candid. And, you know, in this particular case, registries did not have a particular stake in them in this overall thing. Either way, you know, they thought that, yes, something should be done, but it wasn't of great importance to registries. And to be quite blunt, registries were not going to speak out against their customers unless they had a strong rationale for doing so. So I think it's something that's built into the system, and I do strongly support a principle which says we must address it and must be prepared to confront it, because right now it's unspoken, unsaid, and it's politically incorrect to mention it.
So, Alan, that brings me back to what I wanted to ask you all along is, so is this a statement that the ALAC wanted to make, make the point, but didn't have a particular action in mind, or do you think that the ALAC was looking for some particular change in this case?
I think it's just something we wanted to bring to the table, which hadn't been talked about until then. And since clearly we're not really desirous of saying, let's kill this whole thing because there's a negative aspect to it. But I don't think we had envisioned what the fix was, but perhaps a new principle which raises the issue, doesn't pretend it doesn't exist, is the way to approach it at this point.
So is it a principle or is it maybe a recommendation? Or could it be both?
I think it's probably both.
So would you give that some thought and see if you can come back to one for the list?
I can try. I don't have
okay,
any.
And then
I'm not working on anything else these days, so.
I know. me neither.
Just like Avery and you.
Yeah. So, and a lot of other people.
And Greg.
On this call, there are a bunch of us that are doing a bunch of things right now that are all coming to a head at the same time.
I think it's something that needs to be addressed and not pretend it's not a problem.
Okay, well, we'll look for something from you and anybody that wants to work with you, and then also Aubrey will run by any ideas she have, because they may sync up or they may not in that regard. And did you want to say something else, Ellen?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Now, I suspect it's going to be kind of similar when we go to 419, okay? But that, again, is a comment from you, Alan. And I think, actually, and this is one I think I this may really be connected to what we just talked about. It may not, but I'll let you make that call on 419. And
so
I'm aware that you submitted some comments, and then there were some ALAC submitted comments, and I know in some cases there were some overlap.
They really overlapped. They were restating the same things.
So it's probably okay on 419 that we say, refer to the responses on 418. Is that correct?
Sorry, you just lost me now.
So in terms of the working group response to 419, can we simply make reference to the response on 418, the one we just...
Okay. Sorry, I'm now looking at it. They're the same one. They were the two different... I think Marika can verify, but I think those are the two different wordings from the two different documents. They're the same issue.
That's what I thought. But
yeah.
I wanted you to confirm that. Okay.
Cheryl says she's on the call. Does that mean Cheryl wanted to speak?
I'm not sure. You're welcome to, Cheryl. Okay. All right.
Sorry, it took me a moment. It took a moment for my microphone to connect, that's all.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it just took a moment for my microphone to call. Because it's the microphone through the tablet, not the normal microphone I'm using. I just wanted to come in behind the plan for that previous one. And I also wanted to just note that I have been interacting with the chat, and if I'm putting up a green tick, it's because I'm strongly behind the person that's talking. But I definitely think that where it says by Alan Greenberg, it is an extraordinarily rare thing if his opinions were not reflecting that of the ALAC and then articulated in the ALAC view. It's just like you were kind of bifurcated a little bit more than I thought you should have done, Chuck. That's all. Thanks.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I see the problem now. I did. There was an ALAC statement, and then Alan Greenberg submitted a questionnaire a day after it had theoretically closed, because Marika wanted to close down the thing, and I said I would submit it and have it ratified by the ALAC. So it is
right.
An ALAC statement, not an Alan Greenberg statement. Cheryl,
yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out to me. I hadn't caught that.
Yeah, and I remember that scenario.
Yeah.
That's why I thought there was probably duplication here. So.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right, my apologies if I came across irritable on that. I didn't realize it, so I appreciate you pointing that out. And again, I thought a very healthy discussion went on. So I think that wraps up Section 4, which has to do with the principles from the survey, and brings us to Section 5. And this is where we get into the recommended new processes. And 5.1 then, the registry stakeholder group made the comment that you see there, that comfortable with the time frames proposed, but wonder if they're consistent with the latest comment period proposals. And I think I raised this once in the working group in an email or something, should we try and sync up what we have in our report and when we convert it to a final report with the new comment period guidelines that have been implemented? So that's basically the question. And if so, if people think we should, then I think we just need to go through, not on this call, but and do that. Because when we're talking about these processes, the way they were written according to the old comment period guidelines. Any thoughts on that? Alan?
Yeah, I think unless there is some overriding constraint which says we need more time or less time, we should be honoring the standards.
Okay.
So we should not do, comment period should not be lower than the current 40 days or 42 or whatever it is, unless there's some really overpowering reason why that's necessary.
Thanks. Marika?
Hey, yeah, this is Marika. If I recall well, I think we're talking everywhere about minimum periods. So if I recall well, I think it's a minimum of 30 days, while I think the current public comment period is a 40-day minimum. So basically, there wouldn't be a conflict unless the GMSO would insist that it would need to be 30 days. And in that case, there is an exception process that is available as part of the current public comment period where approval would need to be sought from two ICANN global leaders to have a shorter public comment period. And in certain cases, there may be very good reasons for it, such as certain time constraints or events that require to do it quicker. But at least the way I think we've currently interpreted, and or at least as so far has been the experience, we usually always run them as, you know, the minimum requirements as set by the public comment period, and there has been no reason to, you know, go below that to meet the minimum requirements that the GNSO has set. So I don't see any issue, at least from that perspective.
So could you take I don't think this is a rush need, but could you take a quick look at the processes and see if there are any language tweaks that need to be made so that at least we're not inconsistent with the current standard?
Yeah, I can do so. There's Marika.
Thank you. Alan, is that a new hand?
No, that's an old hand I didn't lower.
Okay, thanks. All right, let's go on to 5-2. And that's from Carlos, who, as we just so Carlos, unfortunately, is not with us. Carlos and I had some exchanges, and some others joined in on the exchanges on the list after I listened to the recording last week and looked at this. Is there anyone who thinks they can communicate Carlos's concerns here better than I can? I don't fully, as you could tell by some of my comments, get this. I did clarify that, and I don't know if this is one of the cases where he's talking about mechanisms. When he was talking about mechanisms, he was talking about the three new processes. Did get clarification on that. So notice that he says under this perspective, I'm not clear why the GIP and the GGP would only be triggered by ACs on the board. Consequently, it's not clear to me to whom are the recommendations of the GIP binding. Now, I answered that one on the list. The GIP isn't, I don't think the GIP is binding on anyone, as I recall. But Marika, let me let you jump in.
Yeah, this is Marika, and I think indeed, I think your email conversation with Carlos already indicated that I think some of the elements he may have misunderstood, because you're correct, the GIP is not binding, and you know the GIP and the GGP are triggered by the GNSO, although they can be requested by others, they don't trigger those. So I think this may just be a question of clarifying, and I think we can do that probably even in the response to confirm or deny some of the assumptions that he's making in his comments that would hopefully help set that straight. And again, we can maybe ask Carlos to indeed review the notes and working group response and see if in the next meeting he wants to come back to those or whether he accepts the feedback that is provided.
That sounds good. Thanks, Marika, and thanks for the agree there, Amr. And I think Mary in the working group response, it's probably good to put in there one thing that was noted is that the GIP is not binding on any party. Now, we know that the GGP is binding on the board, but it's not something that changes contractual requirements for contracted parties. So I don't know that we need to say that there. But I don't get part of what he's saying, though, and this is why I was kind of trying to throw it off on somebody else when he's saying, and I'll come to you in just a second, Alan, I'll finish my thought here. We should take into consideration the difference it would create in the process if it was directly triggered by a contracted party or by an indirectly affected party as opposed to the ACs and the board. Well, first of all, contracted parties I don't think can trigger one of these things by themselves. I don't think that's a response I made in the email exchanges, but a contracted party can't really trigger one of these things. That has to be the GNSO council, right? So, and I see a hand up. So, Alan, go ahead and jump in.
Yeah, just for clarity, recommendations are recommendations. GNSO recommendations are not binding on anyone. The board can, with sufficient voting threshold, approve them or reject them, but nothing the GNSO does is binding in its own right.
Yeah, and that's a good
point. That's why
we
call them recommendations.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and it might be good to put that in our working group response. But it is true that that in the case of consensus policy, and of course we're always assuming that the board approves them, if they're approved by the board, they are binding on contracted parties. That's the EPDP and the PDP. In the case of a GIP, it was specifically said in the descriptions that they're binding on the board. Obviously, you're right. The board can ignore that. You know, obviously can disagree.
It says they're binding on the board?
I think that's correct. Marika, can you help me out there?
This is Marika. The way it's basically written that it means it's binding on the board unless they reject it with a similar threshold as is done for the PDP.
Okay.
So basically, I think that's how the bind. I mean, it does say somewhere like binding, but I think we explain what binding means as indeed, you know, they in principle need to follow those unless, you know, with a certain, you know, supermajority they actually overturn them. Because they're not deemed in the interest of ICANN or the community.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the correct word to use, binding, but we can refine that in the next pass.
Yeah, and I think, this is Rick, and I think in the report we did try to define it, because it's really to make this distinction that indeed with, you know, the input that is just, you know, everyone can just put it next to them, but if it's provided through a GDP, the board can't just say, oh yeah, thank you very much, and not do anything with it. They are required in that sense. Maybe it's better to say they're binding in the sense that they're required to act. So whether it's to adopt or to reject, they are required to act on those recommendations. While in the GIP, you know, they can just say thank you, they can say nothing, they can just, you know, ignore it. There's no requirement whatsoever to do anything with it. So I think that's better said, the main difference.
Yeah, my recollection is when we designed it, we did that quite deliberately. It wasn't that we were afraid to stare down the board. This was a different level of input.
Thanks, Alan. I think you're right on that. Now, I think, Mary, I think in our working group response, or if it, I don't think there's necessarily an action needed, so it's, I think, in the working group response column, that the things that Carlos says at the end there are really answered by adding a statement there that a contracted party cannot trigger one of these processes. And I think that clarifies his concern there, but I'd like the rest of you to look at that and make sure. I mean, the GNSO as a whole has to do it. Contracted parties are part of the GNSO, but they can't trigger it by themselves. They could request initiation, and I'm not sure I don't know if that's what he's getting at or what, but the GNSO as a whole has to make a decision according to its rules to do that. Anne?
Yes, thank you, Chuck. I think you may mean to say any one stakeholder group cannot trigger, because what you said was a contracted party. You don't mean an individual contracted.
I actually did mean that, because he says that. But you're right. Any one stakeholder group can't either. But I picked on that, on contracted parties, because that's what he says in the comments there. And what is it, the next to last sentence?
And I guess that, you know, I'm curious about the word trigger, because you know, we were talking earlier about, for example, ALAC being able to go to the GNSO and say, hey, we urge you to proceed with GIP, GGP, EPDP, whatever, and that could be considered a trigger. Are we looking for the word initiate, that only the GNSO can initiate?
Well, I think it's hard for us to tell. Again, unfortunately, Carlos is not on the call, but like was said earlier, I think he can look at the response that we have, and if he has further concerns, he can let us know. Is that okay?
Well, I just want us as a working group to be precise in our use of terms, and I don't think the term trigger is consistent. I would use initiate instead of trigger in the notes.
And it looks like Mary's capturing that in our response. Okay, let's try to get through 5-3 with our at least one of our IPC reps still on. I think Greg had to go to a CWG call.
Great. Thank you, Chuck. It's Ann. I'll try to work through these quickly. The first point is that I think IPC members felt that it should be stated up front in the proposed additional new GNSO processes, either, you know, paragraph one or two, that, you know, we as a working group recognize that these, some of these processes anyway, require amendment to the bylaws. Because some of the initial comments we got just from folks reading the report was, well, wait, you know, there's no authority to do that. And we responded, well, yeah. You look in the annexes that, you know, amendments are required to the bylaws. And so the feeling was it should be stated right up front here in the final report in the first or second paragraph that these require bylaw laws amendments.
So, Mary, could you maybe take a look at this and see where it would be an appropriate place to put that up front? Because we do, Ann's right, we do deal with it in the annexes. And all of you will recall we talked about possible amendments to the bylaws and so forth. So, but their point's well taken. It would be good to have it in the body of the report. So can we make that a Mary action item?
You sure can, Chuck.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Is that okay then on that part, Ann?
Sure, absolutely. And then the second point was it was not as clear to IPC members as we in the working group believe that it had been clarified that GGP applies to non-consensus policy and EPDP applies to consensus policy. They felt that that should just be very much more expressly stated.
And so that is something that those are statements that could be added with each of those processes. Do you agree with that? So if we put this on Mary's shoulders to maybe add a sentence or whatever's needed in each of those processes to make that clear, do you think that would suffice?
Makes sense to me.
Okay. Alan, go ahead.
I don't think that statement was correct. A GGP cannot result in consensus policy.
Right. In other words, that's non-consensus policy.
But the other one may apply to consensus policy or other policies. It's not exclusively consensus policy.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good clarification.
Right. And I think I would agree with that. This is Ann again. I just think that it needs to be very, you know, expressly stated for folks to actually understand.
Yeah, no, I,
what we're really recommending.
I will point out that the accountability CCWG, I had a conversation with Becky Burr, who believes that all GNSO policy is consensus policy. I believe she's incorrect. But there are some people who believe that any policy coming out of the GNSO is a consensus policy.
Well, if you're defining consensus policy as that which is that registries and registrars are required to implement, you are correct, Alan.
I believe I am correct.
No, you are correct. I'm going to be emphatic.
As I said, we had an extensive conversation.
It's a place where the contracted parties and you are going to agree. See?
Well, she was speaking as a contracted party.
Yeah, okay. I'll chat with Becky sometime on that. I'm not sure what the context is. But
The context is changing the bylaws. And there's one particular part of changing in the core mission or whatever that she uses the term consensus policy and a pointer to spec one of the GTLD agreement where I believe she meant policy. The Annex A is quite clear that there is some policy is consensus policy, but not all policy. and we need to get the bylaws right.
And semantically, we can say that something is a consensus policy, but it may not be something that can be imposed on registrars.
A policy established by consensus is not a capital C, capital P consensus policy.
I'm with you all the way.
Well, just a tickler, we need to go back and make sure that when we do the bylaw revision plan proposal in the CCWG report, we need to make sure we get that right.
Yeah, I agree. All right, the third point then, Ann?
Sure. The third point was IPC wanted to bring up the fact that early GAC consultation is desirable in connection with the three new procedures, just as it is desirable in relation to, you know, a full PDP. I do not have specific suggestions as to how that would best be accomplished, but you know, the feeling was that our working group should at least recognize that. It may be a longer topic than the next 3 minutes, but I'm not sure what to propose in that regard.
Yeah. Is this something, though, that we I mean, is this something we can acknowledge that we agree with that? Because it's a pilot test, it's kind of hard to deal with it directly, is it not?
I don't know.
Any thoughts, Alan? Go ahead.
Yeah, we're in a different world now than we were a year or two ago, and now GAC members and the GAC chair says we need to figure out ways to work together. As opposed to saying it is impossible to work together, which was the party line for a very long time. It should be a principle, but at the same time, I wonder if we're a bit condescending to be saying that now as if no one else believes it. And I think this is more a political judgment than a technical one, and I'm not quite sure what the way to proceed is.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Armour, and then I'll go to Marika.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Sommer. I happen to be one of the counselors working with the GAC on this project. My personal feeling is that although there is a process that is being designed to help the GAC engage with the GNSO at early stages in policy development as opposed to providing GAC capital A advice to the ICANN board after the policies have been developed, I don't feel that this process will in any way conflict with anything we are doing here. I think what we're doing, I think everything we're doing here would further enable what we're trying to do the GAC along with any other part of the ICANN community. I also don't think that we're actually making any changes that may conflict with what we're doing. All we're doing is designing internal GAC processes that would allow them to sort of keep up to speed with what we're doing on a live basis, as opposed to taking a look at something once it's all done and then trying to gauge how they may be able to work intersessionally as opposed to just relying on their face-to-face meetings during ICANN public meetings. So if we're specifically designing GNSO processes and the principles by which these processes will be utilized, I don't really see that there is a need to involve the pilot with the quick look mechanism that we're proposing for the GAC. I may be missing something, but I don't believe that I am, and I'm not sure how it's necessarily relevant. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think basically echoing what Amr just said, I think indeed what we're doing here doesn't conflict or go against what the consultation group is looking at. And And just to point out as well that the consultation group still has quite a long way to go. There are some initial recommendations that are going to be tested as a pilot now, but they still need to look at all the other phases of the PDP as well. So it may be premature here to link the two too much together, although I think just making reference and of the importance of early GAC engagement consultation may not be an issue. And just to point out as well that I think for all of the processes, I think it does have, like, similar to what the PDP has, this kind of requirement that the group needs to reach out to an early stage to all SOs and ACs for that input. So I think in that sense, it is already covered because that obviously also includes the GAC. So, one way of looking at this as well is by singling out the GAC, should we be doing the same for other groups? So, again, then for me, it's not a big issue if we want to refer to the fact that the importance of GAC early engagement also in these kinds of processes. But I think it's basically already covered by the way the processes are worded. Speak about the importance of early engagement with other groups to obtain their input and have that considered.
Thanks, Marika. Anne.
Yes, thanks, Chuck. I want to suggest that I go back to my constituency with respect to this and come back with something at the top of the conversation next week. I note in the chat that Jay Scott has said that he agrees with this comment, and I know there was some pretty strong discussion about it. So I would like to propose that I come back no later than next week before our call with something more concrete. I apologize, I don't have something at this time. But the issue is not whether what we're doing conflicts with that process. That's not at all the issue. I mean, I certainly agree with Amar and Marika that there's nothing about what we're doing that conflicts. But that isn't the substance of the suggested principle, if you will. Is not whether or not it conflicts with anything that's going on right now. But I propose to come back.
Yeah, and I asked what I got. I didn't think they were saying that. In fact, I was wondering, is it something as simple as just adding a sentence on these processes that, to the depending on the results of the GAC GNSO work that's going on, the early involvement of the GAC should be kept in mind with regard to these new processes. So anyway, but you can take that however you like, and then we'll look forward to you coming back. Okay, we're a little bit over. Sorry about that, but thanks for going 90 minutes. We are going to keep going 90 minutes until at least we get through, get our objective ready for developing a final report. And I hope all of you are able to do that. And so, is there anything else we need to address before I adjourn? Okay. Thank you very much. It was great interaction. Continue to be nothing but complimentary to this team, the whole team. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks, everyone.
Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, everybody.
Bye. Mary.
And with that, we can stop recording. Once again, the number is always a wonderful rest of your day.